Hey, thanks for being here. This is East Lake Church. And today our sermon is called One Life. And we're going to talk about a man named Thomas who discovered that no matter how hard you try, you can't do Christianity without Christ. I'm Robin. I'm the lead pastor. I'm glad you're here. And in fact, it's the big idea this weekend. You can write, you need a relationship to practice the religion. And so Thomas is this guy that he's one of the original 12 disciples. And before any of that happened, though, he got very burned out on religion. He's one of those kind of people that wanted to be with God and had been someone that was searching, but didn't find the answers in church. And then just got really burned out trying to measure up and trying to be good enough and to try hard and to put out the right kind of image. And so, you know, for Thomas, he never turned his back on God, never stopped believing in God, but just didn't really know where to look. And you may know somebody like that, that you like you get that they're seeking and searching and they have questions, but they're really not sure where to look. And that was Thomas. And then he sees Jesus one day. And there's something really different about how Jesus is. I mean, he's like a religious person. Everybody knows he's religious and stuff. But there's something really different about him, and it stands out. And it's mostly how he has a relationship with God. Thomas sees someone and thinks, well, gosh, if that's what it looks like to have a relationship with God, I think I could maybe do that. And you know, that happens sometimes. Is like people will like they'll want a relationship with God, and they'll see someone, they'll think, gosh, I could never be like that. I could, you know. But he sees Jesus, and he thinks, I think I could do that. I think that's something that I could have. And so it makes him want to have a relationship too. In fact, he becomes so devoted. You look at this part of the Bible I put in here, John 11. Thomas, who was called Didymus, which means twin, so he had a twin brother, said to the rest of the disciples, let's go so that we too can die with Jesus. So when stuff got really, really rough and people were sort of peeling off, Thomas was the person that was so devoted, he was like, no way, man. I mean, I found the person that gives me hope that I can have a relationship with God too. And so that's Thomas. And you know, the story of Jesus' life in the Bible is only about 3 years long. So think about all the stuff in the Bible about Jesus. It's only 3 years of his life that we know about, that was written about, and that changed the world. Just those 3 years. And that's the part that Thomas was the Jesus tour. Like for 3 years, it was like Jesus was on tour and he was giving these talks and, you know, miracles would happen and everybody was like flipping out over the different things that he said. And these large crowds started to gather. And now Thomas was right at the epicenter of that. He was like he was on the way inside. He had like a, you know, backstage past all that kind of stuff. He saw it all. And now, three years into that, they're all starting to go to Jerusalem for this big feast. Every year, all the Jewish people would go up there. So where this story is all hundreds of people are with Jesus now. And they're all going into Jerusalem. They're all coming in, you know, into Jerusalem. It's the Jesus parade. Here it comes. And there's thousands of people that are welcoming in. It says that the streets were lined. In fact, it's this weekend. We call it Palm Sunday, the week before Easter. And so all these people, here they come, you know, and they're like, here comes Jesus and all the celebrations. And Thomas is a part of that. And they're just thinking, whoa, could it get any bigger or better than this? You know, and sure enough, I mean, thousands of people welcome Jesus. And they're saying, he's the Messiah, he's the Christ, he's the one that's going to, you know, and it's just all this stuff. However, there's a subplot going on because there's a growing hostility between Jesus and the religious leaders of the day. And so as this week goes on, like between Palm Sunday and Easter, there begins to be a growing conflict between the religious leaders and Jesus. And it's really just over about this. They don't feel like that he represents God correctly. They're angry that he doesn't... See, here's what the religious leaders did. They emphasized church. So for them, the whole answer was church and what the church could do for you and going to church. And like that's what it had become. It's like all about church. Now Jesus, he didn't de-emphasize church, but what he emphasized was a relationship with God. Amen. So the well, wow, that was a startling. Thank you. So anyways, they had, so the religious leaders almost got me. I was like, whoa. So you got the religious leaders now. They're emphasizing church. Jesus emphasizing relationship, and this whole week is going on, and everything he's saying, and now there's, you know, remember, thousands of people are listening, and all he's talking about is how much God loves you and wants to be with you and wants to have a relationship with you, and that'll change your life. And the religious people are over here going, when is he going to talk about church attendance? When's he going to talk about being in church? When's he going to talk about, you know, how important it is? You know, and boy, and they just get angrier and angrier, and this week is going on, and they're getting madder and madder. And then all of a sudden, in one day, they arrest Jesus for he breaks the religious rules. They arrest him. They haul him in to before a court. They convict him, sentence him to death on the cross, and he dies, and it's all in one day. In one day, they are so angry. He's in court, he's convicted, sentenced to death, executed on a cross, and one day it's over. And Thomas, he's like, what? I mean, imagine if you're thinking, how does somebody that heals blind people, how does somebody that heals paralyzed people, how does somebody that walked on water, how do they end up on a cross? You know, it just doesn't make sense. And a lot of people are questioning now. They're like, I mean, in one day, it's just everything has changed, you know, and they're questioning, like, well, what should we believe about him and what he said? And I did want to tell you that one of the reasons we started East Lake Church is so it would be a safe place to process your questions about Jesus, because lots of people do. You know, they have all kinds of questions, and there was tons of questions in the air. It's like, how could this have happened, and what's going on? And Thomas, he's pretty disillusioned at this point. He's like, wait a second. I didn't think anything could stop us. How did this happen? Jesus had been telling his friends, these disciples, for a long time, when we get to Jerusalem, I'm gonna die. I'm going to be sacrificed. I'm going to die in Jerusalem. And the whole movement is going to take a big, sharp left-hand turn because I'm going to die. And none of them will acknowledge it. And I just wanted to ask the question, do you ever feel like maybe God's knocking on your heart and you just don't want to acknowledge it? And, you know, not, he's just sort of knocking. And you're sort of like, la, 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 la. It's like, I don't, you know, it's like, because you don't want to acknowledge it. And then all of a sudden something happens, and it sort of confirms what you felt like God was saying. And there's a big part of you that wants to act surprised, like, oh, gosh, I never had any idea. But your heart is saying, yeah, you kind of did. You know, that's Thomas and the inside group. They're all sort of like going, gosh, he told us that so many times. But do you know when you don't acknowledge God's voice, you're never prepared for what happens. Because he's only talking to you because he cares about you. It's not a scolding. He's saying something's coming and I want you to be ready. And if I don't acknowledge it, then I'm not ready for it when it happens. And you can do like Thomas, you know, your faith gets all crazy and you can get angry and you're like, you know, this isn't how I planned things out and I didn't want my life to go, hey, what, come on. Jesus, this isn't, you know, and then here's the crazy thing. Everybody's processing, how did Jesus die? And then all of a sudden, they have to start to process that he might not be dead. Because all of a sudden, a rumor starts to surface. These women had gone to the tomb. There was a cave where they put Jesus inside, and they rolled this stone up, and these women, little known fact, women were the first ones to see Jesus resurrected. So here comes the women. So make a note when anybody says, well, women can't do any, you know, they're not the ones to leave the church and be significant. Read your Bible. So anyways, here come the women. And so, you know, now the women, they come up to the tomb, and the stone is rolled away. This is a big, huge stone, and they're like, what? What's it? How the, what? And there's supposed to be guards there because they put Jesus inside and rolled a stone because all the religious leaders thought, well, he's not that powerful and everything, but they did put a big stone and put guards there just in case. So anyways, the stone is rolled away, and they come in, and there's his clothes folded and no Jesus, and the women are like, what is going on here? And they turn around, and there's the Lord. It's been a moment. And I did want to say, you never know what God's going to pick you for. I mean, I promise you, those women didn't get up that day and say, we're going to be the first one to see the resurrected Christ. I mean, they're just going about their life, and all of a sudden they're like, you're picking us? And, you know, they run back, and they tell the men. And you know how men can be when the women try to tell them, I think you took the wrong turn. I know where I'm going. You know, so they try to tell the men, and they're sort of like, well, I don't know. And so they, you know, they run off and they get there and they see the clothes too, and they're just really, everybody's. So now the rumor starts to circulate. He's not dead. So think about it. Now here's Thomas. He's trying to process and figure out, well, because here's what he knows. Here's what Thomas knows. There's no way I can pull off the teachings of Jesus without Jesus. I mean, it was really hard the last 3 years being with him. There is no way I'm going to be able to pull this off without him. So he's trying to think, where do I go from here? And then all of a sudden he starts to hear Jesus is back. And so now he's trying to process that. He's like, wait a minute, I was just trying to get my head around the idea that he's gone, and now you're saying he's back. And that's the climate that this whole city's in, and everybody's trying to figure that out. They're like, what could possibly be true about this? And there's where Thomas is at. Because he knows it all hinges on the resurrection. And by the way, next Sunday's Easter, so it's Resurrection Day. Oh, did you get my invitation? Here it is right here, grilling with the peeps. We're having shish kebabs. So right here, and it's going to be beef, not liver, so it's going to be good shish kebabs. And so is there any better way to ruin shish kebabs and put liver on them? So anyways, this is going to be good shish kebabs right here. There'll be vegetarian shish kebabs, and we'll try to make some candy shish kebabs. So anyway, shish kebabs. Then other stuff for the kids. So don't miss the party. It's going to be at my house. Come see how I live and hang out with me and my dog Sam and my family. So there's your invitation. Anybody can come. Anyways, Easter's next Sunday. We're doing it because this place is closed one time a year on Easter. We thought, oh, we don't get to do anything. And then we said, yeah. Because everybody thinks that Christians don't know how to party. Come to my house. You shall see. Okay. So lost my train of thought. On the party. So here's Thomas. This is what he knows. He's thinking to himself, okay, this is all or nothing, because if Jesus is alive, if somehow he resurrected, I've got a shot at this thing. But if he's dead, I got no shot. And we're in the exact same place. Everything hinges on the resurrection. Not because that was some big, huge thing. Everything hinges on the resurrection because it means he's alive. And if he's alive, then I'm doing life, and I'm doing the teachings, and I'm practicing my Christianity with him. Now listen, some of you, we have free Bibles you can grab on your way out. And I know sometimes, when I first became a Christian, I've said this before, I'm going to laugh at this, I thought Jesus was an English guy when I first became a Christian, because I didn't know anything of the story. I didn't know he was Jewish or God or anything like that. I just knew I wanted him, so he'll take you however. And so I came to him, and it was so shocking to figure out he wasn't English. And the reason I thought he was English is because I had never read the Bible. My parents weren't religious, but I saw a Bible one time, and I opened it up, and it was like a Shakespeare Bible, like one of the King James Bibles. And I thought, well, that's who Jesus is. He's an English guy. And so for the longest time, and I was like totally shocked when they said, no, he's actually Jewish and lived 2,000 years ago. And I was like, dang, how about that, you know? So, but the Bible in general was a little intimidating to me at first. And if it is to you, I could understand that. And so I just had to sort of get started. Here's what really helped me. I read the Bible knowing that Jesus was alive and he was with me. So whenever you pick up the Bible, it's kind of like this. Let's say that you were trying to read through an email. You know, I sent you an email. And you were trying to read through a long email, 4 or 5 page email that it was hard to understand. You didn't know for sure what it meant. And you were at a coffee shop, and I came down and I sat next to you. What difference would that make? Well, Robin, I don't understand this section right here, and I don't understand that section. But sometimes when we're reading the Bible, we can forget that Jesus is right there. You know, we can like totally think we're just reading a book about some dead guy. But he's not dead. And see, Thomas knows that everything hinges on this thing. I mean, the heart of Christianity is the resurrection. Next Easter, very heart of it. So he's thinking, oh man, like this could be everything or it could be nothing. And so let's look at his story. That's the context of it, and I'll read it to you. Let's see what it's all about. It says, Thomas, one of the 12 apostles, who's called Didymus, which means twin, wasn't with them when Jesus came. The other disciples told him, "We've seen the Lord." Thomas told them, "I refuse to believe. I refuse to believe this unless I see the nail marks in his hands, put my fingers into them, and put my hand into his side." A week later, Jesus' disciples were again in the house, and Thomas was with them. Even though the doors were locked, hard to keep him out, Jesus stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then Jesus said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and look at my hands. Take your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas responded, "Jesus, my Lord and my God." And the first thing I want you to notice here is notice when Jesus shows up, they're not able to lock him out. And, you know, we usually lock doors to protect ourselves from something. And so, you know, who knows what they were probably afraid. And so they got the doors locked. And I just wanted to, if there's anybody in your life and you're wondering, gosh, are they ever going to respond to God? They are so locked down. Don't give up hope. Don't be afraid. He goes right through locked doors. You know, he just like shows up. And I bet they're all thinking, huh, there he is. And notice the first thing he does. The first thing he says is peace. He doesn't use a scare tactic. Even though the church, unfortunately, is known for its scare tactics. And I don't mean any particular church, just any church in general is known for trying to scare people into living a certain way or believing certain things. That's like if you ask people, that's one of the main, that's what they believe about us, is, well, they're just going to try to scare you into doing it. Maybe sometime in your life, someone tried to scare you. Something's going to happen to you in this life or in the next life. And, you know, my grandmother told me when I was little, I was really bad one time. I mean, for a little kid, I was like 4 or 5. And she said, you know, if you keep acting like that, God's not going to like you. And then you're going to have to see him someday, and he's going to punish you. He only likes little boys that act good. Well, you know, I was like 4 years old. I acted bad most of the time, you know? And so I was thinking, gosh, I don't know if I ever... I mean, there was something in my heart that wanted to see God, but she, like a seed was planted in me that I needed to run from God, because if I ever saw God... It caused me to be afraid of God. It was like, I don't know if I want to see God. And, you know, later on in my life, someone blessed me with this one. They said, when you get to heaven someday, there's going to be a big, huge movie screen, and all your life, all the secret stuff is going to be put on that movie screen so everybody can watch it in heaven. But you don't want to go to hell. You want to be there. And I'm like, oh, that sounds like a great place to be. Gosh, I can't wait to get to heaven. I want to see the movie of all my sins with everyone. So I don't know what yours is, but maybe someone tried to scare you at one time, and maybe God brought you here today so you could maybe see something a little different in this story, because Jesus shows up and he says, peace to you. No scare tactic. There's a reason for that. Peace is the best environment to discover God and have a relationship with him, not fear. So he says, peace to you. And you can imagine, think about, what do you imagine Thomas is thinking when he sees Jesus? Because he's like, whoa, no way, uh-uh. And then there's Jesus. He's probably thinking, whoa, I'm in trouble. You know, it's like, and think about this. Jesus starts to talk, and I bet Thomas is like, you know, he's just like waiting for the lecture. And then Jesus says, peace to you. And he's like, say what? Did I hear you correctly? No scolding? Can you hear God when he says something that totally you just never expected him to say? Could you hear God say to you, I understand. I understand what you're going through. Could you hear God say, I forgive you? I know you can't forgive yourself. I know the stain won't come out, but I forgive you. Could you hear God say to you, I still believe in the future that you want. I know everybody's out to get you. I know things aren't going your way. I know it looks like, oh my gosh, they've got me now. They've got me cornered. But could you hear God say, I still believe in your future? I heard someone say this week, I don't know what the future holds, I know who holds the future. So can you hear him? Because Thomas is like, he's like ready, he's like flinching, and then Jesus says something that totally catches him off guard. Peace to you. And he starts to talk to him. Let's look at three things that happen, right? Number one, in your church, why does it matter to go to church? So number one in your notes, why does it matter to go to church? And this is the first thing. I wanted to say something. Church in general does not have the greatest reputation with people that don't go to church. Now, I'm not talking about any specific church. I'm just saying, just fly the flag of church out there and ask people what they think of that flag. So any denomination, we're non-denominational, but any denomination, non-denomination, independent, people that jump and shout, people that kneel down, it doesn't matter. Just any Thai people, flip-flop people, doesn't matter. Just church in general, the reputation that it has with people that don't go to church is, here's a study that was done and it's in this book, They Like Jesus But Not the Church. But listen, this is a study that was done. Here's the things that people think. The church is an organized religion with a political agenda. The church is judgmental and negative. Now, not any particular church now. I'm not bashing anybody. I'm not even saying that they're right. I'm just saying this is the perception out there. The church is dominated by males and oppresses females. The church is homophobic. The church arrogantly claims all other religions are wrong. So that's what people are thinking. And ironically, it sets up an interesting opportunity at the same time. Because anytime you have a huge, huge negative, there's a chance for a big, huge positive. It's like a slingshot. When you take the direction this way, wrist rocket is the best kind. Pull it way back like this. Well, if you can get that thing to release, it's going to go the other direction a long ways. And here's how it can happen. Let's say there was a national chain restaurant. I'm going to use one for an example just so you can, I won't put a black eye on somebody. But anyway, some national chain restaurant. And everybody, kind of the word gets around that the food is overpriced and it's never on time and it's not very, very good. It's cold and they're not warm and friendly when you walk in. You always have to, your table's never ready for you. So the word just kind of gets around about this restaurant. It's like, stay away from that restaurant. It's like really not worth going to. And you come to work one day and your boss says to you, hey, everybody, we hit our numbers this month. I'm taking everybody over, to this restaurant. And you're thinking, oh, man. That's the restaurant I avoid. And then when you walk in, there's the most friendly hostess ever. The dude walks up, hi, what's up, everybody? How you doing, everything? We got your tables in just 1 minute. It'll be like in 2 minutes later, you're off to your tables, and you're looking around, and it doesn't look dirty or anything like that. Everybody's smiling, looks like they're having a good time. You arrive at your table, they've already got the chips and salsa there. Two things of salsa, not just one. And you're like, wow, they just keep bringing the chips and the salsa. Because you know how annoying it is when they give you one of those little tiny eyedropper salsas? They really should put a hint on there, you're not getting more chips. You know what I mean? Because that's what that is. It's like, because nobody, they give you the little salsa. No, this is like big Tupperware bowls of salsa. And you're like, wow, And they just keep bringing it, and your server's there. And it's the perfect server, because the perfect server's kind of funny and knows how to hang out, but they also know how to get the heck out of there, because it's not their lunch, So anyways, they're kind of hanging out, and everything goes. And then your food comes. You order one of your favorite things, chicken fried steak with gravy and biscuits, and give yourself a cardiac arrest, but right on. And so, And you're like, and it's hot and warm and it tastes good and everything's great. And you're thinking to yourself, what the heck? It's like everything I like here. And then they bring the double chocolate mousse gooey dessert and say, we just thank you guys for coming. We love having you. This is free. And you're like, here's what's going to happen. It would stand out anyways, but it's going to really stand out when you walked in there with a negative opinion. Do you know our whole goal at East Lake Church is to leverage the negative opinion that people have about church, probably because in most cases it's been earned somewhere, and to leverage that to cause people to see something different. If you invite your family and friends here, the whole idea is they'll see something different, because we understand that people are like going, no way, it could never happen at church. And so we're hoping, we're wanting to take advantage of this very ironic situation that's going on in our nation. That's why we're at East Lake Church. Take advantage of it. You know, and people had that. And Thomas now, why go to church? Well, here's what happens to Thomas. Like, okay, so why even go to church? He misses the first time the disciples are all together and they're having their little time, whatever it is, little church time. And Jesus shows up and he's not there. And that can happen when you're a Christian. You get bummed out, you get depressed, you don't want to go, and so you sort of pull back, you don't go to church, and then Jesus shows up. So why do you want to go to church? To have an experience with God. Not to get a merit badge, not to not get a demerit, not to have an image for people, not to be able to feel like I went to church today and everybody saw me and I'm doing good. It's not a car wash that you go in and get cleaned up and go out again. That's not church. Church is a place that you go to experience God. Everything we do here is designed so we can have an experience with God. That's why you go to church. You go to experience God. And Thomas misses out on an experience that he desperately needs. He really needs it. And I'm not saying, you know, every time you miss church, you're going to miss one, but I'm just saying that's why we're here. And Thomas needs an experience with God, and he misses it. And he's on the right track, by the way, because you can't live off of somebody else's experience with God. And Christianity is not a spectator sport, so it's, you know, we're rapidly becoming spectators. And Christianity, I mean, you can't live off of somebody else's experiences. It's not a vicarious thing. So he tells the guys, well, that's great that you saw Jesus and you're okay with the resurrection. That's really good for you, but I need my own experience. And so he's on the right track, but he would have had his own experience, but he was somewhere else. So encourage people that you know. Say, hey, come on, go, because they can have an experience with God there. And by the way, this is an open party, so anybody can come here. I have people all the time from the craziest different walks of life, and they said, well, would it be okay if I came to church? I'm like, yeah, of course, this is an open party. But I'm living with someone. I'm like, oh, me too. You know, bring them, you know, open party. People disqualify themselves from the very thing they need. And so, you know, here's Thomas like, no, you know, and it sounds like it's a pretty good group of guys. It's a kind of a good picture of the church because they accept him even though they really disagree with him. And think about it. I mean, they're probably thinking, Thomas, man, you're just going to blow us off? We're telling you we saw the Lord. We've been through 3 years of war together. We're telling you we saw him. It's us, man. This is me, Peter, John over there, all our time together. And you know, they're probably a little wigged out at him like, come on, man. Like, and there's a pretty good disagreement. He goes, I don't even care, man. Till I put my hand on him, it doesn't matter. And instead of saying, well, fine, if you're going to be that way, you find yourself a new group of friends. They don't reject him because he disagrees with them. And that's one of our values here at this church. We don't reject people because they disagree. Safe place to come and process. Neat picture of what the church can be like. He just gets to stay with them. A week later, because they don't run him off and they don't get angry at him and they won't believe what he wants to believe and live how they want him to live, and you get to be with us if you do these things, because they don't do that, the next time they're together, he's there too. The whole hope is people would understand that they can belong before they become. And so here he is, you know, this next time. And you can jot in your notes here. Can I set the terms with God? That's a good question. Thomas is very clear on the proofs that he needs. Unless I go touch him, unless I put my finger in the holes in his hands, unless I put my hand into his side, I'm not going to believe. I'm not going to do that. So the question is, can I ask God to prove it to me? Is it okay to ask God to prove it to me? It was with Thomas. Some people, like, you can get this idea of God that he's this white-haired man with this big beard that sits up on this high throne, and you grovel before him, you know, and you either get touched by the scepter or not. It's like here's Thomas. He's very, very honest. He's like, you know, he tells the guys, he goes, my faith is shot. I got nothing left, man. And either I put my hands on him myself or I'm out. And you think what Jesus would maybe do when he shows up. Thomas, we need to have a talk. Oh, how you feeling now, Thomas? He's honest with him. He says, I got nothing left. I'm going to have to... I do want to caution you. You know, when you make... There is a caution in this, because when you set up proofs in life, when people have to prove it, it can be a way of defending yourself from life and relationships. It's like, well, when they prove to me they'll never lie again, then we can be close again. When they prove to me that they won't go behind my back and talk to the boss, then... When they prove they'll never hurt me again, when they prove, you know, you can set up proofs that go too far with people and God. And here's the problem, it's not really honest. Have you ever been in a situation where you realize somebody wanted you to prove it, and every time you went to prove it, they just like made the bar a little higher? And you're like, what the heck, man? You said, no, you weren't noticing the bar's actually this high. So you do have to be careful. Because it can be a way of just defending yourself, making people prove it all the time, and you have no intention of allowing them to ever hit the mark. So you do have to be careful. But Thomas seems more honest. He comes before Jesus and sets the terms. He tells God, well, just let me touch you and I'll believe. And I wonder what he thought when Jesus said, Thomas, if you need to touch me, come touch me. If that's the terms that you're setting for us to have a relationship, I am willing to meet your terms, Thomas. Come touch me. Look at your hand and look at mine. You've seen this hand before, Thomas. The last 3 years you saw it. How's it look different? Come touch it. Don't ever be afraid to be honest with God. Gut-wrenchingly honest. God, if I don't see this man, he is blessed by your honesty. Aren't you, when someone's honest with you, when someone's really honest with you about life, isn't there something that makes you just go, wow, that is so cool that they could be honest with me. God's the same. He's blessed by your honesty. And that's what Thomas does. He sets the terms. This is what I need. So I just wanted to ask the question, what proof do you need from God? And you've been feeling like you don't have the right to ask him. Thomas did. He asked him. Sometimes we feel like it's not religious enough, or, you know, we haven't done enough to deserve it, or we feel like, oh, God doesn't care about those things. Years ago, there was a woman that was in the church, and I would see her come in all the time. She always sat in the very back, and you know how new people are there by herself. As soon as the church starts, she was gone, you know. Didn't even stop and get an extra cup of coffee. Just bam, she was out, you know. And so this went on for quite a while, but I'd always see her, and she'd be listening and everything, but, you know. And then one day, you know, she didn't turn and leave, and I thought, whoa, you know. And so I see her. It was kind of a big, crowded church, and she comes down to the front, and she says, hey, my name is Jill, and I'm an artist, and I was wondering if I could talk to you for a minute. I said, yeah, what's up? I noticed you've been coming. She said, well, I feel really embarrassed to say this. This is so weird to say, but I have a question. She said, I'm an artist. I'm single. I live by myself, and my treasured possession is this bird. And the other day, I left all my oils, my oil paints, out on the kitchen table, and the bird came out of his cage and flew into the oil paints and got the oil all over itself and started to get sick, and the oil started seeping in, the oil paint started seeping into the bird's skin. She's telling me this story. And I can tell, you know, her eyes are watering up, you know, and she said, I took the bird to the vet, but he's not going to make it, and he's just getting sicker and sicker. And then she stopped, and she said, I'm so embarrassed to say this, but would you pray for my bird? And I was listening. There's so many things that run through your mind at that moment, you know. But I was like, yeah, I'll pray for your bird. Right on, man. There's a story, like a little thing in the Bible that says, not a little bird falls to the ground that God doesn't know it. So let's pray for your bird, you know. So I was like, let's pray for your bird. So he's like, really? I said, yeah. I said, I'm going to close my eyes, but do whatever you want. So I started praying for a bird. Like, God, this bird means a lot, and we'd be glad if you'd heal the bird. But especially I want to pray for Jill, God, because she's hurting, because her bird's hurting. And I get that. I have an animal at home, and I'm just put it before you, God. And when I got done with that prayer, I looked at her, and man, you could just see she had an experience. You could just see it. Now, she called me a week later and told me the bird died. I thought, well, there goes my career as an animal healer. My chance to do that. But here's what she said. She said, you know, ever since that prayer, it just hasn't mattered as much. There was just something about how God was with me in that moment. And honestly, I think sometimes we pull back from God because we think, he's not going to care about that. Or we do this. I deserve this. Or we do this. I don't deserve this, God. Instead of just coming to him and saying, this is what I need you to do. Just put all the other things aside. I shouldn't have to get treated like this. I should get treated like this. This doesn't matter. Put everything else aside and just be willing to go to God and say, everything, all bets off. I'm telling you, God, this is what I need. And see what he does. Now, the third thing in your notes and getting towards the end here is Jesus, my Lord. So Thomas, now here's the interesting thing. Thomas thinks that he needs to touch Jesus. But after he has an experience with Jesus, did you notice in the story he never does? Have you ever thought in your life, you're thinking, this is what I really, really need? See, here's the safeguard. Here's why I can tell you today. Go tell God what you need. Because I know that after I experience God, I'll know whether I really need it or not. Thomas is like dead on, man, I need to touch him. I'm not playing. It's going to be gross, but I got to put my hand inside there. And then when Jesus says, come ahead, Thomas has this experience with Jesus, and he realizes, that isn't really what I needed. What are you convinced that you need? I need a raise. I need that person to apologize. I need them to see how important I am. And it's like real for you. You'll never know if you really need it until you have an experience with Jesus. I need to move from this city. I need a better job. I need a different husband. This one stinks and sucks. I'm getting a different one. You know, it's like, whatever. You know what I mean? It's just like there's lots of different ways to go in life. I need, I need, I need. And then after you've been, you know why it's safe to start with I need if you're willing to be with Jesus? Because after you've been with him, you'll discover if you need it really or not. And here, Thomas, come touch me. And Thomas is like, no, I'm good, Lord. You're my God. I'm good. And he says, my Lord and my God, which is a way of him saying, you know, Thomas had said that before, but this time it's his way. The way he's saying it is that I understand that it's a day by day. I understand that we're in a relationship, Jesus. I understand you are my Lord and my God all the time. This is a continuum. It's a continuum. This week I had an opportunity to cheat at work. So there was a contest going on at work, and me and another guy were tied for the lead to win quite a bit of money in this contest. And as we're coming down towards the end of the contest, you know, it was getting closer on the very last day, and I saw a way to manipulate the numbers so I would probably win. I saw a way on the computer to manipulate the numbers so I could probably win this contest, and nobody would know. Well, somebody would know, but besides him, it's like, you know, like nobody real would, like on this earth, would know. And I was like, I could win this, totally win this contest, you know. And I've been working on my character for a long time to not be a liar and cheater. I came out of the womb lying. I don't know why. That's just been one of my big sins in life. Just I came out of the womb lying. Did that hurt? No, I'm good. Just little baby, just lied right off the bat. You know, it's like I just always have, and cheating. I mean, so I got like, I have worked for a long time. I mean, my character has been on the anvil, hammered out. I don't cheat. I don't lie. I don't cheat. And this week, the temptation was so strong to cheat. I couldn't believe it. It was like it was pulling me. Have you ever had that happen? It's like Haagen-Dazs, ice cream in the freezer when you're not supposed to have it at 1 a.m. It's just pulling you out of bed. It's a magnet. It's not even your fault, you know. It's like, and it just was pulling me. It's like, you know, you deserve the money and you're justifying it. It's just pulling me and I'm like seeing everything I could do. And I wish I could tell you that it was because of my strong character that I got through it, but it's not. And I'm down the road working on my character, and it was I wish I could. I wish I could say, easy money. But it was not, man. It was all day. And all I did all day long was I started to talk to Jesus about it. You know, well, how would you feel if I cheated God? Here's what he said. Well, how would you feel? Such a great, he's always got, you know. And he started to talk to me about the kind of person he saw me to be. Because, you know, when you're tempted, have you ever had this happen? You kind of, like, the more you're tempted, the more you get drawn, you start feeling like the kind of person that you don't want to be. Have you ever had that happen? It's like you're over here and you feel this way. Here's who I am. Here's who I am. But you're just, and it's even in your mind. You haven't even done it yet. You know, you're on the computer. There's the button, but you haven't done it. And, you know, it's like, there's my way to cheat. And just thinking about it, you start feeling like a cheater. You start losing the idea of who you are. And that's usually when we do it because we think we're that way anyways. And he's just sort of adjusted me. He's like, no, 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 you're not that guy. You're this guy over here. You're this man. And that night, you know, I went home that night and I didn't cheat. I went home that night and I didn't cheat. And I probably, you know, maybe it's going to turn out I have less money. But I had a clear conscience, which is priceless. My Lord and my God. Listen, Christianity was never designed to be a try-hard religion. It's meant to be practiced with Jesus, not for Jesus. And Thomas gets that. He's like, I could never do this stuff without you. And when Jesus says, well, come ahead, I'm here. And Thomas is like, ah, the resurrection. Now I got a shot. And so do you, and so do I. If we don't allow ourselves to be drug into some idea that we're supposed to do this stuff on our own, that there's some big book in the sky that we're supposed to follow and try really, 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 really hard and just feel like crap anyways. God brought you here today to tell you that he wants to do it with you. And here's the good news. Your relationship can be a benefit to others. Thomas ends up being this great leader in the early church. I mean, he has ups and downs like all of us, but he becomes this great leader, and tons and tons and tons of people watch his relationship with Jesus, and they watch his relationship, and they decide that they want a relationship like that too. When you have a relationship with Jesus, it can benefit other people because they see it. There's a last thing, and then we'll be done. Oh, one more scripture. Jesus said to Thomas, you believe because you've seen me. Blessed are those who haven't seen me but believe. Here's what Jesus was saying. Thomas, tons and tons and tons of people are going to believe in me, and they won't even be able to see me. They won't be able to see me, Thomas, but they're going to see you. And it's going to actually cause them to believe. Big, huge convention was going on, and Christians and non-Christians there. And this one guy, they had this time where he got to stand up and tell your story a little bit. This one guy stands up and he says, you know, I'm so grateful to Jesus, how he's changed my life, and I have a relationship with him, and he's done so many things for me. I used to have trouble with alcohol. I didn't treat my family right, and he goes on and on and on. And somebody on the side, you know, says, you're dreaming. That guy's, you're dreaming. Jesus can't do that kind of stuff. And just then a little girl stands up a little distance from this other man that turns out to be her father, and she walks over to this guy and says, Mister, that's my dad. And Mister, do you see that woman over there in that pretty dress smiling? That's my mom. She smiles now. She never used to smile. She used to cry all the time because my daddy beat her. And Mister, do you see my dad? He laughs now, and he never hits us anymore, and he has a real job. And Mister, do you see these pretty shoes I'm wearing? Mister, I never really, like, All my shoes were ugly shoes before, and they were too big for me. But I have pretty shoes now. Mister, if my dad's dreaming, please don't wake him up. He changes people's lives.